The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the Nova Society are those of our guests and panel members and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of any institution any member of the Nova Society is associated with. The material information presented on the Nova Society is for general information purposes only. Reproduction or dissemination for the purpose other than education is prohibited without express written consent of the Nova Society. We'd like to welcome everyone back to the Nova Society. And since today, and actually this week, most of the panel are on vacation, we look back to a conversation we had at the end of March where one of our listeners asked us about the bond reduction Trump received in the New York fraud trial. And this listener from Chicago was asking, did we believe that this showed that there was truly a two-tier justice system? So let's listen in. Okay, so the next one. Hi there, Nova Society. This is a great one. So it looks like Trump is off the hook for $450 million. He must now pay $175 million and has gone and has been given more time. Do you guys think this is fair? You've mentioned a tiered system of justice in the United States. Isn't this an example of that? And this is from John in Chicago, the big town of Chicago. Who wants to take this one first?
I can.
Okay.
Yes, however, and sorry to prevaricate, John, from Chicago. So I've heard a couple of different viewpoints and perspectives, and I am not an attorney. Mark is the one here with the legal training. So he's, I think, probably the best qualified to answer the question appropriately. So on the one hand, I've heard argument that getting a bond for that type of cash, the $465 million, and of course the interest on that is absolutely usurious, is impossible. And that Trump and his people, or Trump's people, approached 30 different companies and whatnot. However, they did not, in their appeal to New York State, they did not detail which companies they approached. At least my understanding, they did not detail which companies and for how much, nor did they show up with deeds in their hands and say, okay, if the property is worth everything that Trump says, claims that they're worth, then they should be willing to give deeds to the court in lieu of bond to hold in case of failure of payment. But apparently bond companies will not take real estate. They want cash. On the other hand, by reducing the amount, Trump has a much greater chance of paying this. And apparently he says that he can. However, now he's hawking Bibles, and this is his personally endorsed Bible with all the Constitution and other things in it. And apparently it's a very low rated Bible in terms of quality. But of course, that has not stopped him from complaining about other judges and being hit with another gag order. But now he's complaining about the judge's daughter and in public. So regardless of what is done for him to assist him, someone like that is simply going to find another avenue of complaint and is going to keep on complaining. Whether the court made the right decision in reducing the bond, I honestly don't know. I mean, Trump had already sent out apparently an enormous number of emails saying Trump Tower seized, rush $25 or however much amount to save Trump Tower from, you know, the fascist state of New York or the whatever it was. And all these different emails to, you know, hands off this Trump property and save that Trump property and all this and that, and precious Mar-a-Lago is you know, going to be stolen by the state of New York or whatever it was. All these different emails already had been sent prior to any action actually being taken to seize assets. although the New York DA had, Letitia James had, I believe, taken the first steps preparing to take assets. So Trump had already started to fundraise. With someone like this, if he's given anything, he will tout it as a victory and then go on to complain about something else where he's not being given a win. If he is not allowed to win or not given something good that he thinks he deserves, then he is going to complain about that. I think anybody else, I mean, the man, I don't remember his name. It's been in the news, a man accused of fraud with cryptocurrency. He's already in jail.
Been freed.
Yeah, and he certainly committed. He doesn't have 91 felony counts. He's not running for president, and he's a much tinier danger to the United States of America and the democracy as a whole than Trump is. And this guy's already in jail, and yet Trump is allowed to continue. So why Trump keeps reeling free and the Supreme Court is dragging its feet and he's allowed to have more time with this one. I'm not, as I said, I'm not a judge and I'm not an attorney. I don't know if I would have made that decision if I'd sat on the court, if I were on the court. I don't know if that would have been the decision I have made. What do you say?
So for one thing I think is we need to make clear is that this his fines and penalties have not been reduced from $464 million. That may happen eventually, but this latest move to reduce the bond that he is required to post while he appeals the case to $175 million simply allows him to go on appeal, to appeal the verdict. And the appellate court may change the verdict, may decide that the, I suppose they could decide anything. They can decide that, you know, that there was no case here to begin with. I don't think they'll do that. They could decide, I suppose, that they can reduce the fines and penalties from that, you know, it'll be about $500 million, because the interest continues to accrue while he's running through these appeals. And I think that that Trump probably will have almost as much trouble raising $175 million as he will $464 million, because he doesn't have it. And this pump and dump scheme that he's doing with his media stock likely won't come in time for him to get that money. So, you know, he may reach out to billionaire friends of his for help. I suppose that could happen. But, you know, this is justice moving the way it moves. And if you're wealthy enough to have, you know, 20 something attorneys working for you, I imagine that you can do a lot of things that poor people can't. And that is essentially a two-tiered justice system, which is really, I think, the biggest shame of this whole thing.
And you notice how his very wealthy daughter and son-in-law, the Ivanka and Jared, there are not offering to help him.
Right, which could change, of course. But I suppose they're waiting to see whether he can come up with it on his own and from who. And here's the crazy part. He hasn't ruled out getting it from a foreign source, which kind of means that he would be beholden to a foreign source. And is that really something that voters want to see? Again, I go back to the fact that if Republican voters had known in 2016 that he had a deal with Russia, which he kept denying, would they still have voted for him? This is as we say, the party of Reagan. This is the Cold War party. This is the Hawks. It seems to me incredible that at that point, anyway, they would have twisted themselves into pretzels to make that a palatable thing to do. But who knows where they are now?
Yeah, I don't know. I would hope that they would not have voted for him.
Well, I guess what we will see. All right. So to the question of the $450 million, let's get something also very clear. Trump is still a convicted fraudster. This does not change that. So the conviction has not been overturned. So to say this is a victory, you're still a convicted frauditor. And that has not changed. Now, the $465 million, that is a very large amount of money. And as you say, this is, you've got to pay the bond so that you can appeal. It is not unusual for an appellate court to reduce a bond amount. Let's remember, when Judge Ngoron came up with the $465 million, he basically used a formula, and the formula that he used was, okay, this is how much this cost the state of New York and the state of New York taxpayers by all the fraud that had been committed, and he came up with that amount of money. Will that be reduced? I would think that when this thing finally totally plays out, it'll be reduced, but he's going to pay something. He's going to pay a substantial amount of money. It may not be $465 million. It may be more in the range of $325 million, which is still, for somebody with no money like Trump, is still a lot of doggone money. But it is not unusual for the appellate court to reduce the bond to allow the appeal to go through. The only problem with this is that, unlike Ngoron, who basically has to lay out his formula of how he came up with his judgment, the appellate court does not have to do the same thing. They basically said $175 million, and it sounds arbitrary. I'm kind of surprised they only went down to $175 million. I would have expected it to be about $250, which would have been about half. That would have been probably more acceptable to the public. But $175, as Scott pointed out, is still a lot of doggone money, and who knows if he's going to be able to come up with it. I think he will. I think he will be able to come up with it because you can probably piece together. Now, to your point, Brooke, about the property, bond agents, and this has been reported extensively, bond agents don't like property as collateral.
No, they don't.
Because they hate it. Well, it's not only that, but and most of his properties are encumbered. He doesn't own them all. I mean, he owns this building, but he's probably in cooperation and in collaboration with a few other people. And you've got to deal with them to be able to liquidate this thing. And you have to pay them off what they're owed. So you're really basically only left with, so if they say a building's worth $40 million and there's four people that are involved equally into it, each one gets $10 million. So yeah, it's worth $40 million, but Trump's share might only be $10
million. Right, right.
And then there's the cost of liquidation and all the other things that have to go through. So it's a losing proposition to take property as a collateral for a bond. So that's one thing there. Is this an example of two-tier system? And I would say I would totally agree with Scott. It shows that if you have the money and the resources, like the RNC, who's paying these bills, if you have the money and resources, yeah, you have a better chance in court than the average person does, because you can basically throw a boatload of lawyers at this. And that's one of the reasons that we're looking at the delays and the delays and the delays that we see in all of the Trump cases. It is just simply a matter of over-lawyering this whole thing. And the system really isn't made to act quickly in those kind of instances. Whenever you see a case against, let's say, a big corporation, those cases take years because those corporations have an army of lawyers that go in there. And remember, the prosecutor is one group of people. It's just one group. They don't have the resources, number one, and they don't have the staff, number two, that a rich corporation or a rich person can bring to bear on a case. That puts them at a disadvantage. But surprisingly enough, those prosecutors usually win. But it's got to go through the system, and the system is not good. It is not expeditious on the best of instances, but it's really not expeditious when you are throwing an army of lawyers, at a problem who can come up with all sorts of different ways to be able to delay and basically gum up the works of the system. So two-tiered system, yes. There's those for the rich that have the resources, and there's those for everybody else, like us, that don't have those kind of resources. So I would agree with that. But as far as the bond is concerned, it's not unusual. I'm kind of surprised how much it was reduced. It would be nice if the Court of Appeals had to show their calculation onto how they came to this number, but they do not have to. And it's also important to remember, this is the first Court of Appeals. There's another court above them. So this may not be the final stop. This may not be, the end all. The other thing to remember is he's still been convicted, found guilty of fraud. That's a loss, no matter how you look at it. And even if he has to pay, it's still a loss.
I hope that that voters understand the implications of what you just said there, is that this guy's whole persona, the edifice of his story, is a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
It's real. His and to go even a little further in terms of the buildings and things, liens, other things on them, just almost worthless. And when you get right down to it, eventually we're going to find that out. And I guess it's only Wednesday or so that he'll have to come up with this initial payment, and we'll see how he does it. And but I hope somehow or another it begins to sink in to people, to voters, that there's not a lot to like here. And what we thought, if you were fooled by The Apprentice and you thought that that was really who he is, okay, I guess that we could give you a pass on that. TV is a powerful media. But boy, if you can continue to get fooled by this man, then shame on you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, John, we hope we answered that question. And we'll see how it plays out going forward. So that's all the time we have for today's episode. The Nova Society is a production of the Phoenix Research Institute. We'd like to thank our sponsors for this episode. BH Conflict Resolution Services, a full-service dispute resolution firm offering expert and cost-effective mediation services to couples, groups, and businesses. BHCRS can be reached at www.bhcrs.com. We'd also like to thank our podcast partners, Buzzsprout, who hosts the Nova Society, Audacity, our editing partners, and Podkite, who does all of our analytics. iHeartRadio, where people get their music and podcasts, Apple iTunes, the largest source for music and podcasts on the internet, Spotify, the most popular source for the Nova Society. The Nova Society is available on all of these and other quality platforms. We'd like to thank all of our listeners. Without you, the Nova Society would not be possible. If you have a comment, question, or would like to be a guest on the Nova Society, we can be reached at nova.society.podcast@gmail.com. Always remember, the power of society is knowledge. So for Dr. Scott Gershwer, Dr. Priscilla Hobbs, Dr. Brooklyn Ann Weldon, and all of us here at the Nova Society, I'm Dr. Mark Bound. Be well, and we hope to see you again next time.